Okay, so we've heard a lot about 40 hertz. So here's the first question. 40 hertz music, what is it?
Is it a song?
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it
okay.
On?
It can be embedded in music. In this particular study, when we're using it for 40 hertz, we're using it only as the single specific sound. So it is actually not very musical when you just hear a pedal tone for 25 minutes, and it feels essentially just like you're sitting in a very large vibrator, and you barely hear any sound at all because of the sound is translated into a vibrotactile sense because it's so low. It's like sitting on your subwoofer. 40 hertz is barely picked up by any of your sound systems. But if it would be like you were listening to an organ piece where the person has put their foot on the E on the pedal and then is playing away. And we do have pieces of that sort, one that we used in a sleep study, which used 33 hertz, low C, as a constant. That also has an effect, by the way, on Parkinson's. I didn't tell you about that study for lack of time. But so it's not music, it is just a sound.
Does listening to music have the same beneficial effects as performing music?
And there's a second part.
Oh, and the second part. Is singing as effective as playing an instrument?
Okay, well, the listening part and the playing part are different. So the studies that have been most effective, Glenn Schellenberg, who's number one hit wonder in research, few years ago showed that children who take 1 year of music lessons gain about 7 IQ points as a result of that. That has been replicated over and over and over again in all sorts of contexts, and it applies whether it is singing or whether it's instrumental music. So that doesn't appear to be a difference. The studies that have looked at singing and cortisol, for example, have not, we haven't seen studies of instrumental music, but we know singing in a choir. Within 15 minutes, you have decreased cortisol levels and increased interleukin levels, and consequently, your immune system is boosted, and you probably get over the flu as a result of the choir practice.
Question for Dr. Christie. Is there any evidence that relates music, neuroplasticity, quality of life, and happiness?
I think you're living it right now. I think there is actually a lot of evidence that shows, and particularly with the behavioral therapies, showing how much happiness music can bring to the lives. But when you start looking at for evidence in changes in neural structure, that's been a little more difficult to find, and a lot of it is because you start going to rodent models and to animal models to try and look at it, and there maybe the tonal frequencies that they find most that are going to be most effective for them are different than the ones for humans. And so there have been studies where they have played Bach and Mozart. And in fact, I believe it was someone like Megadeth or something that was most effective for rodent brain plasticity. I have not
seen the rodents are happier
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen their video. I would like to try seeing how Elvis sounds at 40 hertz on my rats. So.
Rats might like that.
Two questions for Dr. Broder. Firstly, how did you know that holding Sky while playing the piano was helping him during his first year while he was crying? And second question is, what is the role of the music therapist in relation to the iPod project in long-term care facilities?
Okay, first question, Sky. It's intuition after you do this for decades, you just know. And it's also because the child was not pulling away, he was not biting me, he was just staying very close to me. So I knew that he didn't know where he was, you know, he's visually impaired. So, and he didn't know what I sounded like, he didn't know my smell, didn't know my voice, didn't know what I was gonna do to him. So he was just afraid. And it took just time, a lot of time, to make sure that he knew that I was not going to hurt him, that we were going to be friends. But you just feel it, you know, it just takes time. You just take your time and it works. And can you repeat the second question? Thank you. About long-term care, oh yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's the iPod project.
Well, there's different projects happening, and I think that everything is pretty new right now. There's an association called Music Heals, and they're gathering all the iPods, iPhone that you have that you're not using, and we're dispersing them around to facilities. So it's called the iPod Pharmacies, and you can actually drop your iPod, iPhone that you're not using at the conservatory, and we will disperse them to clients in needs. Now, the effect in long-term care, maybe Kirsten or Alan, but he's not here, would be better. See, I work in pediatrics, so the long-term care is not my area of specialty. But I think it's just an emerging field right now, and the research is not really advanced. So do you know anything about that?
My feeling is that it's a considerable help in quality of life, because it does provide those opportunities when family members can communicate again. And it's very disheartening to see your loved one being essentially incommunicative, depressed, sort of silenced. And when you put the earphones on, suddenly this person comes alive again. It allows that sense of connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sense of connection, which you also had with Sky, in a sense then it is reanimated at that later stage in life. And just to add to the scientific explanation for why that probably worked, we just did a master's student just finished a study, her name was Song Kim, in which she looked at silent children who were non-communicative because of trauma or other genetic reasons, and couldn't communicate, couldn't talk, they couldn't express themselves in any way, there was really no sign that they were responding. And a music therapist used music to moderate and mediate the making of a connection between the mother and the child, and over a period of sessions, we used a whole host of bioindicators, EEG, ECG, EKG. We started to see that indeed there was a strong and very quick connection between the parent and the child that developed. So we could see that in fact it was happening biologically and with bioindicators, but it was mediated by the music therapist who knew how to use the music to get through to the child.
I would like Lee to move to Victoria. If you can help me to do this.
Question for Dr. Christie. Is there any evidence that neurofeedback helps brain recovery from concussion? And then second, are there extra areas of the brain that are activated during sporting activities?
The concussion literature is difficult at best right now. And in the animal studies have mostly been looking at more severe forms of traumatic brain injury rather than concussions. It's difficult to diagnose a concussion in a rodent. You okay, buddy? In the human literature, there's a huge hesitancy, I think, in sports participants to come forward when they have a concussion. There's a lot of fear and anxiety about performance and not being able to play, et cetera. So it's actually hard to get the individuals in. So our first task has really been to increase education and let people know it's okay to come in, and you're more likely to play and to be okay if you come in and get checked. And 85% of kids or adults that get concussions are going to heal within 24 to 3 weeks, quite rapidly, 85%. So we've actually just started looking at the miserable minority, the 15% who have long-term issues. And they usually end up in work, safe BC care. And so we've started the beginnings of a collaboration with them. And they actually do have music in some of their clinics, and they've got something like a light therapy going too. And it's to help with vestibular balance. Vestibular balance is something that is often perturbed in individuals with concussions. And so they're looking for ways to make it enjoyable, but also have an effect. And so they have visual motion actually, make people nauseous, just like seasickness. So that's one of the tacks. But there isn't a lot out there in the literature saying that, the neural feedback is a huge benefit yet, to my knowledge.
I'm trained in neurofeedback, never encountered that it would in fact do that. But just to add to, in terms of diagnostics, I found your task very interesting. One of my research colleagues in MARC, our research center, has been looking at pitch perception, and in a similar sort of way, people who have a concussion cannot hear, make the difference between small intervals, small differences of pitch. And so as part of this project with Dr. Cusumano at St. Mike's Hospital, they have now baselined all the boys that come into St. Michael's private school that does a very strong sports program. So we know if once they enroll in that school, they're going to have a concussion sooner or later. And so we just tested them all in terms of pitch perception. And so when they have a concussion, we can just test them now for their pitch perception, compare how they were before the concussion and how they are after. So it's a diagnostic tool, but it is not, there's not yet any therapy that we know of that helps the recovery.
Yeah. All right, this is a bit of a self-serving question from the School of Music. Do musicians have lower risk of developing neurodegenerative diseases like dementia?
Research shows that research study finished last year at Baycrest Hospital with 30 years of practical experience, you have gained 5 years of extra cognitive reserve.
Damn.
And probably have delayed dementia by 5 years.
There you go.
Okay, on the other side of things, does music affect the anesthetized patient or the anesthetized surgeon? And if so, any genre more effective?
What has research has shown is that when surgeons use music in the operating room that they have selected, that there's their own playlist, not the anestheticians, but the surgeons, then they perform better.
Okay, so have you demonstrated the benefits of music in combating dyslexia? Joanne, do you want to take a comment on that?
Yes. There's a branch of music therapy called ORF music therapy, and it works on left and right brain. There's different brain theories, and if you look at the left and right brain theories, then you can actually refocus and rebalance. So you can do a lot of patterns, a lot of ostinato patterns, a lot of rondo patterns if you're musicians. And you work on the coordinations of the left and the right. So the patterns, like on a xylophone, will be, you know, to start like this, you move like this, you start to do crossover and so on. So it works on different area of your brain, and you actually start to work on the learning disability just by refigurating, like neuroplasticity, rewiring.
There are also people who would claim that the Tomatis method, which does filtered music, can have an effect. I'm very skeptical of it, but these claims are made. In Norman Doidge's new book, he wrote the book, The Brain That Changes Itself, and his new book has a chapter in which he argues very strongly for Tomatis and its effect. Tomatis, the advocate for it in Toronto happens to be his neighbor, and so he likes him a lot. But I'm quite skeptical, but you know, there may be evidence that it works.
Question for Dr. Christie. Could you comment on the relationship of the brain and alcoholism? Is there a place for music in the healing and recovery?
That's a complex one. Alcoholism is a complex problem in its own right. And there's a variety of problems in the body, ranging from changes in digestion and food intake patterns and psychology. So you really have a very complex disorder. But again, I think we've seen in a variety of situations that music, the right type of music for the right person, can be an anxiolytic, can almost have the placebo effect of taking the place of the alcohol or taking place of drugs, and it has been used in a lot of addiction therapies as a mechanism to reduce the severity of withdrawal and to act as sort of an anchor to also help against relapse. So there is a role, yes. The rehabilitation, though, I think it's such a new field that there haven't been a lot of people that have looked at if there are changes in brain structure following addiction. I don't know if you know any more.
I'm not sure whether it's applied. There was a study by Valerie Salampour, was from Vancouver, I think, but she did this in McGill, and it was released in 2013 in January, I think, in which they found that music that's particularly enjoyable to you, sort of music that leads to the chill down your backbone, like frisson, releases dopamine, and the anticipation of the peak in Nessun Dorma will allow you 15 seconds ahead, you will get a dopamine release before that tenor goes over the top. And so there was a paper presented in Miami at a music therapy conference in 2011 that at that point proposed, and Miami is the place where they know about drug treatment, that music that had that kind of an effect might have some efficacy in the treatment of opiate addicts, particularly because it would, at least to some extent, replace some of the dopamine that they were seeking. But whether I have not seen any active research studies that have tried to apply that.
I think there's a really big stigma around mental illness and any kind of addiction. And we ran a program years ago by somebody who specialized in that area, and that music therapist actually started his shift at midnight, and he went to the streets. And because they didn't want to come in, for example, the conservatory, they didn't feel like they belonged there. So we had to go to them, and we have to bring drums and bring the recording studios and go outside in the van and just work with them until the little hours in the morning. And we find out that after we work with them, those individuals were not returning to, you know, addictions and alcohol. They were actually going home to sleep, or whatever home was.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the level at which it's probably most effective. Yeah, I think a lot of addictions have a lot of pain that people are self-medicating. And if there's some way of addressing that pain by helping them express themselves, feeling that a therapist is somehow connecting to them, some of that pain is ameliorated and perhaps the addiction drive decreases. But that's just my sense.
So once again, I'd like to thank our three great speakers for a fantastic evening. And it was just wonderful. And I'd like you to once again show your appreciation for them.